All right, so I want to discuss tonight. I titled it The Thought That Counts, Beis Halevi and Bas Ayin on Chanukah. So I want to share two different ideas. It's really two different sources. One, the Beis Halevi, two of the greatest Torah minds of the 19th century. The Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Salavechik, and the Bas Ayin, Rav Avram Dov of Avrish, who in recent years, I think Rav Biederman quotes him a lot, so he definitely became more popular recently. But both of them really gedolim, massive Talmid Chachamim, and two different ideas. I'll say it like this. The Beis Halevi I'm viewing as more of like a challenge, something that we should think honestly, a little cheshbon and nefesh, think to ourselves in a way that we could apply it. And the Bas Ayin, I'm going to say, is more chizik. So a challenge in chizik and both relating to Chanukah. The Bas Ayin is on Chanukah. Beis Halevi is actually from Parsha Shemos, Shibud Mitzrayim.
Litvish and
Chassidus. Sure, you could call it that. A little Musar and Chassidus, Litvish and Chassidus. Although there is a halachic element of the Beis Halevi. But it's definitely, like I said, it's more of a challenge for us to think about. And everybody can take it in their own way. You know, as the saying goes, a Jew should always have two notes in his pockets. One of them, one pocket, Bishvili Nivre Ha'olam, that the world was created for me. And the other pocket, Ba'anochi Afar Va'efer, I'm like the dust of the earth. So have a little confidence, a little chizik, but also a little humility. So I think that's what we'll get to tonight. Again, it looks longer, but it's just an optical illusion. It's not actually that long. And we're gonna get through to them. And hopefully, like I said, they're connected. We'll see at their core. Okay, so first we're going to begin the Beis Halevi, which again is from Parsha Shemos. So in Parsha Shemos, and the Torah begins discussing the Shibud Mitzrayim, there's a peculiar pasuk that the Torah says in the... Oh, wow, rookie mistake by me. I apologize. I didn't number the sources. I can't remember the last time I made that mistake. Okay. All right. So we'll just the first source. So Shemos, it says, Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim. That Hashem saw, this is b'nei Yisrael in their struggles, in their avodas, parach, and everything they're going through. Vayeda Elokim. And God knew. God understood. So what does this mean, Vayeda Elokim? What did God know in this concept, in this context? So the Beis Halevi, the second source, says as follows. We're not going to read the whole thing, but we'll read certainly the bold parts and the ikker parts, I guess. So we'll start with the question. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim. Ulcha'ora eino muvan, kavana shel siyam ha'pasuk, Vayeda Elokim. He said, I don't understand. Oh, wow. Everyone's showing up here. I don't understand the conclusion of the pasuk of Vayeda Elokim that God knew. What exactly did God know? So in the second paragraph, before the bold, we're going to pick up with the bold, but I'll just say outside, he says that there's a medrash which says...
What's the context of this pasuk? Like, what's this?
The context of the pasuk is when B'nai Yisrael were doing their hard labor, and they were crying out to God, and they were struggling and suffering, and Paro was adding the work, even though making it even more difficult for them. So, Vayeda Elokim, that God knew something. God knew something amidst their very difficult time in Mitzrayim. So what did God know? So the medrash says... I think there's a famous idea that when we were in Mitzrayim, B'nai Yisrael were actually Oved Avodah Zarah. They ended up worshiping Avodah Zarah. The Arizal says that we got to the lowest level of Tumah. There are 50 levels of Tumah. B'nai Yisrael reached the 49th level of Tumah, and had we stayed in Mitzrayim for even a moment longer, we would have descended to the 50th level from which we can never come back, at which point, even though Hashem promised Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that he would redeem us, if we got that bad, we're no longer the B'nai Avraham Yitzchak. Like, we're a different entity at that point, so he wouldn't be able to redeem us. That's why he had to take us out of Mitzrayim in a rush. That's more of a Pesach idea. But it was very bad. Chazal understand that our situation, our spiritual situation in Mitzrayim was very bad, understandably so, because we were dealing with pretty harsh conditions. So Vayeda Elokim is going on that idea. So he says, the Medrash says that Vayeda Elokim means that Hashem understood the reason we were committing Avodah Zarah, the reason we were turning our backs to Him, was because of the very difficult labor. It wasn't, you know, if things were good for us, we wouldn't be, if life wasn't so hard, we'd be much better. That's this idea of Vayeda Elokim. So here the Beis Halevi says an incredible chiddush, an incredible novel idea on the idea of Ones Rachmana Patri. It's a little bit of a halachic idea, or a very bit of a halachic idea, and that is when things are out of our control, the person sins, but it's not really in his control. It's because the circumstances that I find myself in, whether it's something I can't do, I wish I could learn more. I wish I could give more tzedakah. You know, like I give millions a year to tzedakah. But some people, they don't have as much money. Me, I wish I could give more tzedakah. And it's onus, though. Like, so Hashem knows, though, if you had more money, you'd be giving all this tzedakah. Or if you had more time, so that's the idea of onus rachmana patre, that if Hashem understands that, well, it's out of your control, then I'm going to give you credit, either not discredit you for an aveira, or I'll give you credit for a mitzvah. That's the idea of onus. So here is his chiddush. And this is the challenge. We'll read the bold. He says, Vihine, tainas onus, the idea of onus, lo shayach Rak hecha de'im lo haya ha'ones, lo haya osa osa davar. It sounds simple, but it's deep. He says the idea of onus is only there that if it wasn't for the onus, if it wasn't for the pressure, this external pressure that you were facing, you wouldn't be doing this aveira that you were doing. In their case, they wouldn't be committing avodah zarah. V'ha onus hevi'u la'asos, v'az nechshav ki'ilu la'aso. And it's only this external pressure, this whatever situation is going on in your life that caused you to do it, then Hashem will say, okay, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. Aval hecha degam im lo haya ha'ones, haya oseya. But if the situation is such that even if this external pressure wasn't there, you still wouldn't be doing the right thing. Hagam de'ata haya ones, who ones, even though now it happens to be that you are ones, b'chiyagadna lo mikne ones kal, you don't get the petur ones in that case. That is the chiddush of the Beis Halevi. So in case that wasn't clear, he's going to give a very clear example from the Hafla. In this next paragraph, the Hafla, Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz, was a Hasidish Rebbe, but he was also, he ended up being actually the Rav in a Yekisha community. A little interesting Nusach Svartari, they claim, they say, that when he became the Rav in this in Frankfurt, in the Yekisha community, so they insisted that he had to wear his tefillin on Chol HaMoed, because their minhagos wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, even though by the Hasidim, they do not wear their tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So being the Rav of the community, they insisted that he has to wear the tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So the story goes that he acquiesced, and he told them he's going to get a special pair of tefillin just for Chol HaMoed, in honor of the Chag. And after his life, after he passed away, there, I had two different versions I heard. They opened up the tefillin, one was that they're a puzzle, and the other is that they're empty, there's nothing in them. But either way, I guess that was his way of... you know, making shalom, but still keeping true to his roots. They definitely did. Like any good Jewish community, they said tachan and mincha. Okay, so the Hafla, Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz, the brother of Rav Shmelka Nicholsburg. I'm also trying to quote some Hasidish Rebbe tonight, so he was, if that means anything. Okay, so the Hafla says as follows. The Hafla, and I'll paraphrase until we get to the bold again. The Hafla is talking about the mitzvah of Aliyah. Maybe you've heard of it. So the end of Meseches Ksubis discusses the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. It also discusses the important shitas of like the Satmar Rebbe and those who think you shouldn't be going to Eretz Yisrael. It's all found in the end of Ksubis over there. So the Gemara on Kuf Yud Amud Beis is talking about the sin of those who don't live in Eretz Yisrael. And he quotes here that there's the famous shita of Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen in the bolded underline, which Tosos quotes. Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen says, Besov Ksubis, de bizman hazeh, nowadays, and he was writing this almost 800, 900 years ago, Ein mechuyev la'alos Eretz Yisrael. You don't have to make aliyah. Mishum kovid ha'yeshiva v'hadochak sheba Eretz Yisrael. Because it's very difficult in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, it's onus. It's difficult to travel to get there. It's difficult to live there. I spent a Shabbos... credit to Henry Erlinsky, who's very close to the Rav Asher Weiss. I spent one Shabbos with Drew Erlinsky in Rav Asher Weiss's house. Like, we slept there, we ate there, and it was pretty cool. And I remember speaking about, I'm quoting a conversation, I don't know if this like is still a shita, I guess the life has changed since then, but at the time he said, yeah, it's not a given that everybody should be living in Israel, and you have to factor in your kids and their chinuch and your job and everything, and there are some people who are going to be more matzliach and chutzlaritz in terms of their own well-being and social well-being and health and everything. And you have to take life into account. I'm sure there are other poskim who would say, no, Eretz Yisrael or bus. But okay, so this is already presented by Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen that it's possible that we all have an out, that there's no chiyuv to go to Eretz Yisrael because it's very difficult to make it there and very difficult to live there. That's what Rav Chaim HaKohen says in Tosos. So the Hafla says, okay, that all this is true, but it's only true if Hashem can determine, if not for the challenges of living in Eretz Yisrael, you would be there, right? Oh, I'm a Rebbe, I'm a Rav, I have a kehila here, I have a job here, I can't make it to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, but Hashem knows if that wasn't the case, if I would be in Eretz Yisrael or not, and only then do you get the petur onus, the very real legitimate excuse to not live in Eretz Yisrael. The Hafla says, only then can you apply it. I remember Rav Schechter likes to quote that he once, as a younger... already Rav, he met Rav Avram Shapiro, the chief rabbi in Israel at the time, and Rav Avram Shapiro said, "No, Rav Shechter, you should move to Eretz, you should make Aliyah." And he said, "I know I want to make Aliyah, but I have some responsibilities here." I said, "What are your responsibilities?" He said, "I give a shiur in YU, and I give the shiur in Fairlawn, and that shiur there." And he heard everything he does. He said, "Okay, fine, you shouldn't make Aliyah, you should stay here." So there are legitimate excuses not to come to Eretz Yisrael, but the point of the Hafla is that it's only if Hashem determines, if not for those excuses, you would be making Aliyah, you would be learning in the morning, you would be doing whatever it is that you're doing, you would be making minyan. So that is an important factor in onus rachmana patre. Okay. And if you just look at the bold at the end of this paragraph, he says, "De Dilma gamim lo haya ha'ones, gam kein lo haya ola." It's possible for a person that even if there wasn't an ones and there was no external pressures, he still wouldn't make aliyah. Umishum hachi magu lo ones al she'eino ola. That person's going to be punished for not making aliyah, even though legitimately he can't. My hands are, I have a job here, I can't leave. Okay, yeah, but even if you didn't, you wouldn't be making aliyah. Such a person does not get the pitur ones, afagap the hashta hu ones. And this is the idea of the Beis Halevi, that somebody only has this Petur Ones, if not for the Ones, they would be acting correctly. Then he brings an example of Shabbos in the next paragraph, in the bold. He says, let's say you have somebody who, because of a situation of Ones, has to break Shabbos. They're a chola, they're sick, they're a doctor, they have to rush to the hospital, they have to heat up some water, whatever it is, they have to use their cell phone. Again, the same principle is true. If such a person would otherwise be keeping Shabbos, 100% they get the Petur Ones, and there's no mark on their ledger for doing this wrong. But if such a person anyways would not be keeping Shabbos, the fact that they happen to be onus in this case, what do you want me to do? I was the other person who was going to die anyways. They're Mechal Shabbos. That's what the Beis Halevi says here. We'll read that in the bold in the next paragraph. It says, Uchumo b'shmira Shabbos, v'chadoma, d'lefa'amim onesu. You could have a person who, sometimes it's onus. La'asos malacha, o avor chola. You have to do malacha. You have to do something for a sick person. Rachman al-Atzlan, that somebody should be sick. V'chadoma. Mikol makom, lo mikre onus, rak lo oso, shahayu shomrim oso, im lo haya onus. The only people who get the Petur Ones are the Shomer Shabbos doctors. That's basically what the Beis Halevi here is saying. And that is how he concludes. He says, that is the upshot in Vayeda Elohim. And that is something that really only God can know. We and God are the only ones who know the answer to this question. Whenever we find ourselves in these suboptimal situations where we have to either break the halacha or not fulfill a certain halacha, we know, God knows, what would we be doing if the situation was different. And that's Vayeda Elohim, that the Pasuk here is testifying that yes, B'nai Yisrael were Ovdei Avodah Zarah Mitzrayim, but Hashem knew, Vayeda Elohim, that it was only because of the onus that they were doing it. And this is something only God can know. And if it were not for the external pressures of the Shibud Mitzrayim and everything else, they would not be worshipping Avodah Zarah, and that's what the Torah here is telling us. So it's a little bit of a mechudish, remarkable idea of the Beis Halevi, that we take, this is the thought that counts, that it's not a person's actions. Okay, I'm limited. What do you want me to do? I can't make it there to sell. I had to violate Shabbos. It's all up here. That's what the Beis Halevi is saying, that it depends on the person's heart and mind and their mindset, and only God can judge that. And based on where they're, an honest assessment of where their head is at, that is the way a person is going to be judged. I just want to quickly point out, before we get to the flip side of this in the Basayan, I want to quickly point out that it's not so simple that this Beis Halevi is accepted lahalacha, okay? There is, I provide here a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein and another idea from the Pnini Halacha, which is really an idea from Rav Herzog, the former chief rabbi of Israel, regarding a doctor and a member of Tzahal. Okay, the following question is, can a Shomer Shabbos Chayal switch calls? I don't know what it's called in I know in doctor terms it's a call, but in Tzahal term there's Shmira, whatever the case might be, on Shabbos with a non-Shomer Shabbos doctor, a non-Shomer Shabbos soldier. So here's a question that was posed to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe here in Orach Chaim, Chelek Dal, Simon Ayin Tes. So he was asked, what should a Shomer Shabbos doctor do on Shabbos with regards to his call on Shabbos? So he says that first things first, you should just make a general request to whoever runs these things without being specific, like, can you not let me work on Saturday? I'll take Thanksgiving, I'll take New Year's, I'll take Christmas, whatever it is, but as I'll take the Sundays, I'd rather not work on Saturdays. That's like a very general thing, and that for sure a doctor should try to do. Okay, let's say it still comes out that you're working on some Shabbos. Can you approach another doctor and ask to switch? So obviously if it's a non-Jewish doctor, 100%. But let's say it's a non-observant, non-Shomer Shabbos Jewish doctor. Can you ask them to take your call on Shabbos? And Rav Moshe says yes. Rav Moshe says that you're allowed to do that. And the reason is, let's go to the middle of this Igros Moshe in the bold. He says, V'yesh gam tam gadol lahatir af im Yehudim she'enim shomri Torah. It's mutter for you to switch out of your call on Shabbos, even if you're switching with a non-observant Jew. For sure, if it's, Chris the non-Jew, make the switch. But even with a non-observant Jew, and now you're causing them to come into to drive in the hospital, to use their phone, to do whatever it is that a doctor does, that's mutter. And he says, Shigam kishir beveisam yichalu Shabbos b'meis. So first of all, even if they're at home, the assumption is they're going to be Mechal Shabbos. So, like, what's the difference? You know, they're being Mechal Shabbos at home, they're being Mechal Shabbos in the hospital. You're not really causing more Chilul Shabbos. That's okay, we can all agree to that. But the important point is coming up now. The Chol Melachos Sheyizamin Lo Pachlos Me'amalachos Sheyas Beveis HaCholim Pe'isser Sheim Kein. Okay, fine, fine. So that's his first point. He says, the assumption is they're even going to be doing Melachos at home, so it's not really on you that they're coming into the hospital to do Melachos. But then you go to the bold in the second to last line, and this is the key. He says, the Yosir Nota Shehufchasu. Actually, you're doing them a favor. They're going to have less Isser Shabbos on their ledger. Why? Ki Yesh Harbe Cholim Shemutzer. Because there are going to be many situations that they're now, the Melachos that they're doing, instead of just, you know, watching college football or whatever, they're going to be doing Melachos, yes, but it's mutter, because they're doing it to save a chola. I don't know if it's true for all cholim, but certainly for some situations, it's going to be mutter what they're doing. So let's just think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. So this non-Shomer Shabbos doctor, who would be doing Melachos anyways, Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying, if they show up to the hospital on Shabbos and do Melachos that are involved in saving a life, it's mutter what they did. They didn't violate Shabbos. The Beis HaLevi would argue that. The Beis HaLevi would say, what are you talking about? Like, Hashem takes the cheshbon. If they're going to be doing it anyways, that's not called a p'tur onus. That's one raya, I guess, from a halachic perspective that is not like what the Beis HaLevi is saying here. And the same thing is found in the Panini Halacha at the bottom here. So I couldn't find Rav Herzog's tshuva when I was in Smicha. So we had Pikuach Nefesh, Amir Lenachir classes, actually given by Rav Neuberger. And he quoted Rav Herzog, I have in my notes. So he quoted Rav Herzog as saying the same thing is true with a chayal on Shabbos, that if it's a Shomer Shabbos chayal and he wants to make a switch, so he's allowed to, for the same reason that you're actually benefiting them, that instead of doing malachos, you know, sound that they're doing at home, now they're doing malachos in a hatzalah of all of Klal Yisrael, and that's actually helping them. Again, the Beis HaLevi would say that's not true, because either way, you're not going to get the patur onus in that situation, because it matters, you know, what your mindset is, if you wouldn't be doing the malacha otherwise. So the Panini Halacha here, we could read it together. He says, "Kasher nikva alechayel dati." If an Orthodox Jew has his Toranut Shmira o Siyorim b'Shabbos, he has some sort of guard on Shabbos. V'yesham chayal chiloni, and he has a friend who's a chiloni. Shemeunyon lishmor b'mkomo b'Shabbos. He wants to make the switch. His chayal friend wants to make the switch. Kedei shehadati yishmor b'mkomo b'yom chol. Okay, they're going to make the switch Shabbos for weekday. So first he says, yeah, you got to make sure that you're doing as good of a job in him. You can't let the Shmira level be lessened. So, okay, make sure that that's up to par. But if that's the case, in the bold, Tov Shiachlifu es HaShmirot. It's good for you to switch the Shmirot. And he goes on to say, because you, now you'll keep a normal Shabbos, it'll be good for you. And him, his Shabbos is also elevated, because now the Malachos that he's doing happens to be in the realm of Hatzalas Klal Yisrael. So that is the opinion of several poskim who seemingly argue on this notion of the Beis HaLevi. So I want to put that out there. I'm not going to get into it now. The Minchas Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, actually says you shouldn't make the switch. You shouldn't switch with a not irreligious, non-Shomer Shabbos Jew. He has his own cheshbonos. But there are Gedolei Olam who seemingly argue on this idea of the Beis HaLevi. Yeah.
I feel like it wasn't like, I'm a little confused, but I think the Beis HaLevi, wasn't that saying like to, when you're dealing with like, when you're dealing with, I guess, positive things, like having to move there to Israel, or like,
yeah,
those scenarios. But here we're saying, at the end of the day, they're not doing the malacha. If somebody's mutter, like if you're allowed to serve a
whole, So wait, first, I want to say two things. First, he was also talking about Avodah Zarah. Now, like, meaning the Beis HaLevi initially was saying that the Jews who did Avodah Zarah, it didn't count against them.
Okay.
But Rav Asher Weiss does say in his, he doesn't like the Beis HaLevi so much, but he kind of says that idea that on Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh, like it's always automatically mutter. That's what he would say. Rav Moshe Feinstein says what you're saying, that if a person is saving life on Shabbos, it's always automatically mutter. He says that
He's going to say you're doing wrong.
Well, he says over here, again, the Beis HaLevi says in the second to last paragraph, we read the bold. He says, "Ukumo v'shmira Shabbos, delefa'amim ones hu lasos malacha o avor chola." Sometimes you'll be ones. You have to do malacha for a chola on Shabbos. Mikol makom lo mikri ones, rak le'osam shahayu shomrim oso im lo hayaha ones. It's only called ones for those who wouldn't be doing this anyways. Again, I think it's a radical idea. I do believe Rav Moshe is arguing. I think most would argue on it. I'm presenting it not as halacha l'maisa, because I don't think it's halacha l'maisa, but I think this is what I'm saying, the challenge approach in terms of our thoughts. You are where your thoughts are. I think it's a very significant opinion to consider for ourselves that, you know, we all can't be living, nobody's living their perfect life yet. I mean, it's Olam Hazeh, we're living in an imperfect world. There are things that we wish we could be doing more of that we're not. There are things maybe we're doing more of that we know maybe we shouldn't. And we always have this element of you know, onus screaming at us. Well, it's the difficulties of life and the challenges and the responsibilities, and it's all true. And, you know, you can take a simple example of Limud HaTorah. I think that's a very fair, easy, non-offensive example to anybody, I hope. You know, we all want to be saying tachlin and everything. What could we do? No, but lima da Torah, like, you know, we wish we could be doing more. And it's just an honest question we ask ourselves. Like, if I had more opportunity, if I had a little bit less stress, a little bit more time, you know, what would I be doing with that? You know, how likely would I be to be living in Eretz Yisrael or to be doing X, Y, or Z? And everybody should consider for themselves. I said this was the challenge. This is the chizik's coming. But I think even if I think Rav Moshe is not really accepting this halacha and the Panini halacha and Rav Herzog are not accepting the halacha, that the Yisod has kernels of truth in, and something that I think we could all consider in our own lives, that it is a thought that counts. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rachman Alibabai, and he's certainly looking and considering. And the flip side is also true. The flip, you know, for those of us who genuinely, I wish I could be an Eretz Yisrael. I wish I could be learning more. I wish I could be giving more money to tzedakah. I wish I could help every ani who comes to my door and solve their. Okay, Hashem recognizes that, and that is also taken into account, I believe, in the flip side for the positive as well. Okay, flipping the page here.
Would the Isser of switching for Shlomo Zalman be Lifnei Iver?
Yeah, so it would be an Isser Lifnei Iver. That's what he would be saying. Because no matter what, it's just, you're not doing Malacha.
Even though he's going to be doing Malacha anyway, we assume that maybe he would have taken a longer, you know, nap or whatever, and he would have slept through all the Malacha he would have done on Saturday morning.
Right, so it's that's really its own topic, the idea of Lifnei Iver in Misayeya, and it's basically, there are different gradations, but if you're, that's definitely an argument, but there's room to say that if you're causing somebody to do a malacha that they otherwise would not have done, there's certain unique malachas that are being done that they wouldn't have done otherwise, then in that sense, maybe it is lifnei iver. I still think Ramosha is a pretty standard approach here, that, and it's very logical, like you're helping them. You're helping them in terms of their Shmira Shabbos. Okay, so I just want to take a look now at this Bas Ayin. The Bas Ayin, Rav Avram Dov Me'avrish. So he was, I want to say, not Chernobyl. Is he from Chernobyl? I don't know. He ended up making Aliyah, and he lived, speaking of Aliyah, he lived in Sfas. He's buried in the cemetery in Sfas with all the Arizal and the Rav Yosef Karo. So he's buried there. I want to give credit, two places of credit. A little shout out to TABC, even though I work in Frisch. But I saw the upcoming TABC dinner honoring both Mandelsam brothers, Rabbi Yoni, Rabbi Rafi Mandelsam, and Daniel Gibber. So the first time I heard this Bas Ayin was actually from Daniel Gibber. He sent me a voice note. He learns Bas Ayin once a week with Rabbi Roberts in the, like, when, like 5 o'clock in the morning, Wednesday morning.
Anybody's looking? Emes?
They do both. They do Spas Emes and Bas Ayin. They learn at like 5 a.m. Anybody's interested in another shir? Unless Onus Rachman Apache, you know, it's hard to get up early in the morning. But, and so he sent it to me, and it's beautiful. And then I recently heard this as a shir and why you're talking from Rabbi Yoni Mandelstam. So both members of the TABC, or two of the three members of the TABC dinner. So shout out to them. Shout out to TABC. So it's an incredible idea from the Bas Ayin on Chanukah, on last week's Parsha, actually. And I think gives us a chizik in this very same idea of the challenges, the pressures of Golus that B'nai Yisrael are facing in Mitzrayim that the Beis HaLevi was talking about, and seeing it a little bit more positively. I said this is the chizik, not the challenge. Okay, so here we go. So the Torah in last week's Sedra and Parsha's Vayeshev tells us the story of Yehuda and Tamar. It's a very disturbing, difficult story to understand that the tzaddik Yehuda, who ended up was like, you know, the melech of the Shvatim, sleeps with a zona, sleeps with a prostitute who happens to be his daughter-in-law of sorts in disguise. A very troubling story. And this girl, Tamar, who he set aside to marry his son Shelah, word gets out that she's pregnant. And Yehuda's all upset. What do you mean she's pregnant? She's designated for my son Shelah. There is a yibum, a zika of sorts. That's adultery of sorts. So he says, take her out to be burned. Srefa is the punishment for this form of adultery. Maybe she was a bas kohen. There's a lot of raid there. So that's his story. And then famously, right before she is burnt to death, she says, okay, just before I go, I want to make one last announcement. I just want to say the person who impregnated me is the owner of these three things. Of this chosemes, of this signet, of this ring, of the psilim, of this, you know, cloak, this cover, this cloth, and this mate, this stick, this staff. Yehuda immediately recognized that these are the three items that he gave to that zona who he slept with as a collateral for not paying her on the spot. He's like, I'll come to get you money. So he gave those three things as a collateral, recognizing in front of the entire community. You know, he was like this big gadol, big tzaddik. The rav is the one, oh yeah, it was me who slept with this woman who's designated to my son-in-law. You can imagine the busha, the embarrassment. But rather than have her die, he accepted that upon himself. And that is one of the reasons that many say he was Zocha to become Yehuda the Melech because of that. Anyways, so that was a story in the Parsha of Tamar giving Yehuda the opportunity to confess to his sin, Yehuda accepting it, and saying, Tzadka mimeni, she's right, and they ended up getting married, and from that union comes ultimately David HaMelech and Mashiach. So, interesting stuff. So, the Baas Ayin comments on that story, and he has an incredible insight connecting it to Hanukkah and again to this topic. So, he says like this, Vayihi, let's go to the Baas Ayin, the last source here, second last source. Vayihi kimishlosh chadashim, vayugad liyuhuda lemor zansa tamar chalasecha. So, it was about three months after the episode of Yehuda and Tamar happened, it was told to Yehuda, Tamar, your daughter-in-law, was mezana, she's pregnant. Okay, so he says, Hine Isa Bekisfe Ha'arizal, said in the Arizal, as Jerry was saying before, a good kvittel or Gmar Chasimatova, that Hanukkah, let's skip to the bold, She Iker Sof Gmar Chasima, He Bechanukah. That really, really the end of the Chasima for the year is on Hanukkah. There's like a million Gmar Chasimas, you know, the end of Elul, and then the end of Aseres Mitruva, and Yom Kippur, and Hoshana Rabbah. So this is really, really the last Gmar Chasima. Hanukkah is when the judgment is finally fully sealed, and tonight being Zos Hanukkah, the last day of Hanukkah, this is when the judgment's going to be sealed. Okay. Im Kain, Nuchal Omer Shezem Rumas B'Psukim Elu. Maybe that's what the Psukim here, this story, is referring to. Vayihi K'mishlosh Chadashim. It was about 3 months later. Hainu Me Rosh Hashanah Ad Hanukkah. From Rosh Hashanah until Hanukkah is approximately 3 months. She'az Iker Gemar Chasima. That's when the judgment ends. Al-Kain Baha Mekatrik. So at the end of these 3 months, this is really when our time is up. Now the Mekatrik, the prosecutor comes forth and says, okay, let's see what the Jewish people who made all these promises and resolutions and everything during Elul and Rosh Hashanah, let's see how they're doing at the end of 3 months at Hanukkah time. Al-Kain Baha Mekatrik. Al-Bnei Ha'adam Lifnei Bor Olam Baruch Hu. What does he say? So they come to God, and God is hinted at in the Tevos Yehuda. The word Yehuda, and the Gemara talks about this, has the shame Yud Ke Vav Ke, just there's the Dalit in there, but Yehuda essentially is the shame Hashem. So after 3 months from Rosh Hashanah, the Mekatrik comes and tells Yehuda, tells Hashem, Zansa Kamar Tamar Chalasecha, Tamar, representing Bnei Yisrael, was Mizana. She wasn't faithful. She went and she was with another. All these promises she made to you, oh, I'm going to be with Shayla, your son, all these promises, out the window, she was Mizana. Hainu Knesset Yisrael, Shadam Salat Tamar. That Knesset Yisrael is equivalent to a date. So this is what's going on. These psukim are describing the prosecutor 3 months post Rosh Hashanah prosecuting us to Yehuda, to Hashem, saying we were Mizana and we didn't fulfill our promises. So what's Hashem's response? Next paragraph. Vayomer Yehuda hu abori. Hashem says, Hotziyua v'sisa reifa v'orza. Let her be burned because of this. Okay, that's what she did. Then I'm not going to stand for it. I'm a God of justice in terms of like, I'm chosamo shal kadosh baruch hu emes. They didn't live up to their emes words, and therefore she's going to be burned. He goes on, he says, Shebelo shum gramo min yahui hi har lezenunim. For no reason she forsook me, and she went on to be impregnated by her other desires and whatnot. So that's what's going on. Oh, so what happens next? So then Tamar steps up for herself. And let's jump to the next bold. That Tamar says, no, before you kill me, before you seal my fate, she says in the bold, Ki ha emesu kach, you're right, I made mistakes, I was mizana, I slept with another man, but shirak le'isha sher elalo anochi hara. You know who I am connected to. Again, it's weird. It's hard to understand these ideas in terms of now Kadosh Baruch Hu and pray. But you know who my deep connection is to the owner of these items. To the owner of these items. Perush anachno imo amo tivukim rak bebore olamim. We are connected to you, Hashem. Umash anachnu osim lefamim neged ratzon abori. And this is the key. That which we do sometimes, yeah, we go against Hashem. We sin. We don't live up to our potential. We don't live up to all the promises we made in Rosh Hashanah. Hu rak machmas rov tirdas hazman. It's just because we have such little time, and parnasa is difficult, and all the other taivas and challenges that we have. We're onus. He's saying we're onus. It's out of our control. But the truth is, inside, we are so strongly only connected to you. And that is Tamar's response. And she continues, and she says more. This is the raya. This is a proof that I'm really truly connected to you. Hakernala mi hachosemes. She said, "Who? These are the three items: the chosemes, miramis al hashemen shel neiros Hanukkah, shechasim bechosma shel kohen gadol." The chosemes is a reference to the oil that had the seal, the signet of the Kohen Gadol that they found. Hapsilim, Merames al Psilo shel Ner Chanukah. These are the wicks of Ner Chanukah. And finally, the Mata is Merames al Hakli shel Ner Chanukah. The Mata is a reference to the Kli, the menorah itself. Okay, so just full disclosure, my lack of true Hasidic self. I'm very into the Chosemes and Psilim Raya. That's like literally straight there. All right. The Mata is a little bit of a stretch, but 2 for 3, you know, Ruba Kakulo. I'll take that. No. I don't get struck by lightning from the Basayan over here. They're all good. But certainly, I mean, the first two, that's like on a silver platter.
He would have kicked you off the circle that he saved.
Chosamos and Psilos, and also the Mata.
The Gematria.
The Gematria, Kayedu, Kitevas, Hamata.
You could say
Im Hakola, Gematria, Kli. All right, you said it. Now, anyway, so what it's saying is, Perish, Mehamitzos of Ner Chanukah. We come to Hashem, it's the end of the 3 months. It's the end of the real, real judgment period. And we all know that we didn't live up to everything that we're supposed to live up to. And the Mekatrig is coming and saying, oh, Zansa Tamar Kalasecha, look at what they did. They're nothing. Same thing every year. Same mistakes every year. Oh, they're going to do, you know, I started that feel me for 4 days and I failed and everything. Like, it's the same story every year. And then we come forth on Chanukah and we say, no, Hashem, like, this is the Emes. What we're doing on Chanukah, the Chosamos, the Psilim, the fire, the passion that trying to create a little bit of light and darkness, that's we really are. Everything else, it's the onus, it's the pressures, it's everything else that gets us. It's not who we want to be, it's what we're doing, and this is our response. And what is the response of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the last paragraph here? Vayomer Yehuda, Yehuda says, Tzad Kamimeni, she's correct. She's a tzaddikish, she is righteous, everything she's saying is, I know it's true, and this goes as it's Vayeda Elohim, something that only God can know, that only God can understand, that truly what we want to do and who we want to be is very often much better than what we're actually living up to. So I think it's really that same idea of, you know, where the thoughts are, and the Beis HaLevi is giving us this really, really high standard of like, listen, any onus you want to cash in Achar Meva Esrim, it better be emes. It better be that in your heart and mind, if not for that onus, you're at that Seder, you're not doing this, you're living in Eretz Yisrael, you're doing it. That's a challenge I think we should not take lightly. At the same time, you know, we have the chizik of the Basayan over here, that Hashem looks into our hearts on Hanukkah when the judgment is up, and he says, I know they messed up here, I know, but it's because of the pressures, it's because of the ones, tzad kamimeni, they're righteous, and I'm going to take that into account, not what they've done, but where they want to be, the people who they want to be. Just a beautiful idea in the last source over here.
It's another remes.
Yeah.
We also have all the daita, by Yehuda Elohim.
Beautiful. Oh, he also says, I skipped at the end, that Tamar's claim is the reason I was mezana with you, the reason that I didn't come through is because you didn't give me Sheila Beni. You told me, you promised me, you were giving me your son Sheila. You never gave him to me. Where's Mashiach? If you just give us Mashiach, that will be okay. So the last source over here of Aaron Lichtenstein in Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind, so he quotes the following story. I don't want to say this correct. Yeah, with Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, who was a chief rabbi of Israel in the early 20th century. So in that time, it was still Palestine at the time, and you know, there was like a strict quota for each country for how many Jews were able to enter Palestine in a given year. And the story is, in a given year, the Romanian quota was filled up. And there was a group of Jews from Romania who wanted to emigrate to Palestine, but there was no more room for them. So they wrote a shaila to Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, who was the chief rabbi in Israel, asking him if they're allowed to lie on their, I don't know, their passports or whatever, the documents that they're filing, and say they're from Italy or something like that, which the quota wasn't filled. And he said, no, you can't lie. Like, it's important to make aliyah, but you can't lie. Midvar sheker tirchak. So then they said, can we say we're from Palestine? Can we say we're from Palestine? He said, you can say you're from Palestine, and that'll get you in, because I guess the Palestine quota wasn't fulfilled. And he brings a rye from this Gemara. Supposedly, this is how the story goes. The Gemara Maseches Ksuba says, quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, "Ulatzion yomar ish ve'ish yulad ba." To Tzion we shall say, a man and a man is born in you. Ish ve'ish yulad ba. You know, there are two men who were the children of Tzion, the children of Eretz Yisrael. So what's this ish ve'ish yulad ba? Who are the two children of Eretz Yisrael? Amar Rebbe Maisha Bar Bered Rebbe Yeshua Ben Levi, Echad HaNolad Ba, VeEchad HaMitzapir L'Rosa. two people who are considered to be B'nai Tzion. The one who was born there, the one who actually lives there, and the one who desires to see it. The one who desires to ultimately make it and see it in Eretz Yisrael. So Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld said, for you who are willing to, you know, do whatever you can to make it from Romania to Eretz Yisrael, you can say that you're a resident of Palestine, that you were born in Palestine, because that's what this Gemara means, that a Mitzapa Lerosa is certainly a Zocha to count themselves among the B'nai Tzion. And I think this is true not only for Eretz Yisrael, but for everything. And that's this idea of the Bas Ayin, that we want to be better. We want to do things. We have goals. We have she'ifos. And as much on the one hand, this notion of, you know, Rachmana Libabai, that Hashem just wants, it doesn't matter what we're doing. Hashem wants our hearts. He wants our neshamos. He wants our true essence. So on the one hand, it's a real challenge, like the Beis Halevi saying, that we might have some situations where, oh, what can I do? My hands are tied. Okay, what would you have done? What would you have done? We have to answer that question honestly in our lives and consider where we could even be stronger. But at the same time, it should be a comforting, encouraging idea of Rachmana Libabai, that Hashem knows that there's a lot of pressures that we face, there's a lot of challenges that we face. We want to be better, and I genuinely believe that about anybody who comes out on a Thursday night to have some meat donuts, to learn some Torah, and to, you know, many people are going to go to another Fabringen out, or the case might be. That this is, we wish we could do this every night. We wish we could be learning and connecting to, okay, but we have other responsibilities. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, good responsibilities. And Echad HaNolad Ba VeEchad HaMetzapa LeRosa. Those of us who want to, we want to be in Eretz Yisrael. Who doesn't want to be on a farm in Eretz Yisrael right now? Or on, you know, on the front lines of Gaza, or in a kol and Panovich, whatever it is that we want. But all of us, I assume, I hope, want something more than we have. And even that tshuka, even that desire is very much counted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, appreciated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we certainly have that in our merit. And with that, I wish you a Freilich and Chanukah.